Welcome to Trending. This is Timmery Millington. First day of spring here, and we've got a little spring in our step in studio today because I am excited to announce that after 3 years of being on air, first with Trent Horn and Catholic Answers, we had Hearts and Minds, and then Don and I have been working on Trending over the last year, which, by the way, sad news, he didn't make it to our 1 year anniversary because he was headed up north. But the new news in this, you know, completed first year of Trending is that I have a new co-host, and you've been listening to him the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, hey everybody, it looks like I will be sticking around for a little bit, so excited to be with you. It's been neat. As I've been traveling around speaking in different parts of the country, I've talked to a number of people who have heard the show and heard me on, and just thanks to everybody who's been so supportive. Really appreciate it. Looking forward to Trending with y'all.
Yeah, and I just want to really put a shout out to all of our listeners. You know, it has been incredible, this journey the last 3 years, seeing the show grow, all of you who transitioned over with us to our new home with Trending. And, you know, man, like Chris, we hear from people from Japan, the UK, Canada, Ireland, a ton of people in Australia, and then, of course, the homeland here in the United States. And I'm always excited to hear the reasons people enjoy the show, how it's fortifying them to be up to date with what's going on that is so important on, you know, a moral faith level for their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you've heard from people all over the world. I heard from people from Fresno. So that was different too. But no, absolutely. It seems like
poor Fresno.
Fresno. Central. Actually wonderful people. But it is. I think we're connecting with people because the reality is we live in this world, these things are happening, and as a faith community, we need to be talking about it and really addressing some of these issues that are happening out there in social media and on the web.
And, you know, it's so difficult right now with the way media is interacting with us that there's kind of this balance that we have to search out stories, but at the same time, there's too much information that can become overwhelming, and it can just be sad at moments where there's so many things happening.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I know a lot of people who have just gone off Facebook because the nature of the rhetoric has gotten so negative. Like, people are just arguing all the time, and who wants right. that in your life? So to kind of speak the positive truth of the Catholic Church into that world is, you know, I guess that's what we're here for.
It's so important. And that's where, you know, when we talk about these issues, yeah, some of them, man, the things that are happening in our culture right now are so difficult. But at the same time, that's where you see what the church is teaching is counter to what we're seeing that is breaking the hearts of and minds of so many people in the culture. And that's why we're talking about the tough topics, because there is an area of sexual morality. There's an area of faith and hope that the church brings to help us navigate each and every single one of these difficult issues.
Absolutely. So, hey, I had a question, Timmery. I was talking to a friend who has a chaplaincy. That means he's a campus minister up in Canada. He was asking, where does he find the show? Where can people find the show online?
Yeah, anyone who's listening, whether you're live on Facebook Live, YouTube, or you're listening to the radio right now, you can find the show on iTunes. It is Trending with Don and Timmery currently. We are working on our new home. In the meantime, though, you can find us there, Trending with Don and Timmery. You can look up my name. It's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. Chris will eventually pull on your name, I guess.
I hope so.
But yeah, so that's where you can find us. We're also on the iHeartRadio app. So I know we have a lot of shout out to all the people who listen on iHeartRadio.
I did not know we were there.
Radio. Wow. Yeah, we're on iHeartRadio.
There you go.
Check us out.
Who knew?
And then, of course, your local Catholic radio station. You can find a list of those at my website, timmery.com, for some of the local radio stations. But it's super easy to listen on iTunes to the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. So they just search Trending with Don and Timmery, and that's where they'd find us on the iTunes.
That is where you can find us.
Fantastic.
And if you have an issue, tweet us out, but it's right there. It pops right up. So I hope you guys, too, use the opportunity to share this podcast with other people. We are covering a plethora of topics, one of which being not just the fact that it's the first day of spring, so I'm really excited here, but did you hear what happened with Katy Perry that I'm triggered about, jokingly.
Yeah, you know, I was a couple things. So Katy Perry is now a judge on American Idol.
Right.
So in case you didn't know, American Idol is still on the air, everybody.
I was just about to say, who still watches American
Idol? Oh my gosh. I remember that, like, isn't it? How long has this show been on the air? It's been years that's been
good
on the air.
Good 15 years.
Yeah. Well, anyway, they had a contestant on American Idol, and he comes out, and they always do that bio thing. They want to get a hook so that the audience can relate to them, and they can be, you know, get their airtime. And so he said, I've never kissed a girl. And I think he was like a 19-year-old man. And so that was his thing. And so he leads with that, of course. And Katie said, you know, apparently hasn't come over because she wants him to give her a kiss on the cheek or something. To which he does, because come on, you're on American Idol. You want to get to the next round. You want to get the ticket or whatever it is. Kisses her on the cheek. So, oh, no, that wasn't good enough. And then he goes in to another kiss on the cheek, and she turns and, you know, surprise kisses him.
Plants one on the lips. And I, you know, to begin with, even with the whole trying to get him to kiss her on the cheek, it's like, okay, we get that you see that this is someone who's probably living a little differently than you are. You're already kind of pushing his buttons and not respecting the fact that he's made a big deal that he hasn't kissed anyone. And sure, it's just the cheek, but then she essentially forced herself on him in that sense with that kiss.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's just say this is a young singer who is a female, right? And one of the male hosts does the same thing. How does that story play out then?
Don't forget the age difference there too.
Yeah, honestly, how old is it? I have no idea.
She's in her early 30s. So
it's
like a, you know, 13, 14-year difference between them.
Okay, this is starting to sound a little Weinstein.
But it's okay because anything goes if a woman does it, right?
Well, obviously, you know what I mean? It is a weird thing. And you know, this young man, it's funny, he says, I know a lot of guys would be like, heck yeah, but I was raised in a conservative family and I was uncomfortable immediately. And I wanted my first kiss to be special.
Right. And he was even mentioning at one point how he had to talk to some of his friends and be okay with the fact of like, that doesn't really count. That's different. But here's the issue. In this culture today, if someone talks about being chaste, if someone talks about not having kissed someone yet, they are made to be a joke out of it, right? There's a joke made out of it. You know, here at Katy Perry, instead of thinking, oh, that's cute, that's sweet, here just kind of made a joke out of the whole thing on national television.
Well, and forces herself on him.
Right, exactly.
Right? So again, imagine this is a young woman who says, I've never kissed somebody. She goes up and then the male host like forces a kiss on her in front of thousands, millions of people who are watching, apparently still watching American Idol, you know, you know, like that would just, it would be outrage. It'd be Me Too. It would be, you know, the time is now, you know, it would be wear black in protest. I just think we have to, I think chastity and respecting people's boundaries has to go both ways. If we're ever going to have that society we're looking for, where people are respected, you know?
Right. And I think that that's what's fundamental, is that respect for other people and their views. And I feel like so often, you know, unfortunately, I think people who are maybe a little more conservative with their sexual morality are more polite toward others when they're living a contrary lifestyle, you know? Yet for some reason, if you say, you know, you're chaste, there's kind of like this eye roll, this like, look at you, don't you feel oppressed? Or, you know, this attitude that's just so disrespectful to the person.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. Is it, you know, you go to a party and everybody's drinking and then one person is like a teetotaler not drinking and everybody gets uncomfortable. Oh, you know, have a drink. And is it like, well, oh, you haven't kissed anybody, you have to kiss somebody, because it makes us uncomfortable about our living the immoral life? Is it you're trying to justify? I don't know what that pressure is to say, well, you've decided to live chastely, so now I need to pressure you to live in an unchaste way. You know, why, what's that tendency to pull everybody down to your level?
And that's exactly it. It's like the little crabs when they're trying to crawl out of the cage, one always tries to pull it down the whole time, right? And no one actually gets out. You know, it's the same mindset, is that when we're kind of living in the midst of maybe something that we know to some extent isn't okay, we always want to drag people along. Well, and here's another, you know, story that I was looking at this week that kind of reminds me as well. You know, you've been hearing, especially after kind of the blow up on Reddit, about these deep fake.
Yeah, this is just weird and scary stuff, deep fake. and I hate, it's funny, there's a part of me that hates talking about this because I don't want anyone to go like, oh, you know, let me Google what deep fakes is. Don't Google what deep fakes is. But, you know, technology's gotten to the point now where you can put anyone's face on anything and it's believable.
You know, there was an example, again, don't Google this, but Michelle Obama, right? First Lady Michelle Obama, former president, President Obama, right? You have Gal Gadot also, who's been subject to this, where they're literally putting the faces of people who, you know, are morally upstanding people in our culture, right? You have to kind of, we'll see about that. But people who maybe have not done a pornographic video, and now their faces are being superimposed on videos of famous porn stars. And unless you're really paying attention, sometimes you can't really tell that that's not the actual person.
Yeah, the scary thing is those kind of celebrity, you know, mock-ups have been used to kind of tout the technology, right? And so this is an algorithm that's available you know, out there on the web. And so they kind of demonstrated by taking these celebrities and essentially inserting them into pornography. And it, and in a convincing way, I mean, it, the face goes on and apparently it masks facial expressions, it masks, you know, speech. And so you, it really does look convincing. And again, I have not seen this. I read an article. Don't judge me. But the scary thing is that same tech is available for anybody who's on social media. So if you're out there and you're putting every picture of your kids, everything on the web, there's nothing to stop someone from grabbing those images of your family or grabbing those images of you or grabbing those images of your children and then inserting them into pornographic material.
Well, I know that that's part of the issue a lot of young parents today have is that they are not posting pictures of their children online. And I actually have a number of friends that where this has happened to them. Either it's a picture of their child they've seen posted somewhere else claiming to be, you know, someone else, or I've seen cases where it's actually been a picture of, you know, young teenage girl who's posting nice pictures of herself, luckily not getting too risque, and then fake Facebook pages created with those.
Yeah, no, it's that's a line in the sand I drew a while ago because, you know, as a speaker, I go out and I speak to, you know, thousands of people I don't know. And a lot of them will want to connect on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or whatever because they want to continue to have that relationship and have whatever, you know, whatever gospel I'm speaking come into their lives, right? But they don't need to know my kids' names. They don't need to be able to recognize my children on the street. And I've always kind of said, like, I want my kids to have the freedom to not have people they don't know saying hi to them by name. You know, I want them to be a little weirded out by that. And I think just, you know, I see it over and over again where people just throwing everything on the web. And where's the, you know, I think now we're getting to a point where, well, that's where we're going to start catching it, man. You know, and you don't need a child to make child pornography anymore. You just need to find the pictures of their birthday party.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you can just attach it to something.
And Grant, some people argue, well, you do need a little bit more effort, a little bit more computer power to make this happen. But you bet me, there are a lot of really smart kids today with technology that they won't quickly hop right on if they really want to take the extra few minutes to create this revenge porn, this funny story about someone, and, you know, really ruin someone's reputation.
Well, and this is just the beginning.
Right. We'll be right back on Trending with my new host, co-host Chris Mueller. This is Tim Ray Millington. Welcome back to Trending. This is Tim Ray Millington. And yes, if you have not heard, welcome Chris Mueller, my new co-host in studio.
Hey, I'm back and I'm back for good.
You're back for good.
Back for good.
So where can people find you online if they want to know a little bit more about you and what you're working on?
If you go to chrismueller.co, that's Chris, M-U-E-L-L-E-R.co, you can see the number of things that we're doing. You know, and I'm out active as a speaker, talking to thousands of people around the country every year, working on a project we call the Chris Mueller Project, which is family television for Catholics. It's really something special. I'd love for you to check that out. And of course, you can just see me on Twitter. On the Twitter.
That is great.
C. Mueller tweets.
You know, there are always days for humility. Yesterday I was teaching Pilates, 5 hours straight teaching, and all day I kept having words like that come out wrong. And it was finally my last hour of teaching, 7 o'clock at night, and I'm going, please, Lord, just how many times I need to make everyone laugh today? It just was not coming out right.
Yeah, I had my humility with a root canal last week, so that was my Lenten. Last week. Yeah.
That is wonderful.
Like half the audience right now just cringed.
Yeah. I don't think I've had maybe a child root canal, but I don't think I've had one as an adult.
No bueno.
I'm on my way to the dentist tomorrow, but nothing that bad.
Yeah. So we were talking about deepfakes last segment and, you know, just kind of want to carry that over. Gosh, we trust all of these modern things, right? Like the, you know, video is everything and you got to have video evidence, DNA, all those things. Well, are we approaching a time where video evidence isn't evidence anymore because the ability to make realistic fake video is there? And again, it's not perfect right now. It needs some savvy. Not anybody can do it, but we're just at the beginning of this. People are going to, the technology isn't going to get worse, right?
You know, if you are watching Arrow, DC Comics, this season actually has had a lot to do with a fake video. And
really?
Where a photo has been superimposed on, or sorry, the face of Arrow, the main character, Oliver, who's named after my brother, whose 18th birthday, by the way, was this week.
Oh, happy birthday, Oliver.
I know. But Oliver, his face is put onto this video to make it look like he actually killed someone. And I'm really behind, so I'm like, gosh, good 4, 5, 6 episodes behind. So spoiler alert, sorry. But basically it ends up being that he did not actually kill this person, and that it was someone else who did it. And it was so interesting because here this deep fake story comes out a couple months later, right? And we're already seeing that they're using an example of super hackers that are able to really pin a crime on someone and reveal the superhero secret identity.
Yeah.
But it made me stop and think. And here's the issue. I see a lot of the developers of this who actually choose to remain anonymous, which I think is still somewhat telling. But some of these developers who say, yeah, you know, it's really unfortunate. And of course, unfortunately, it did go there with pornography already.
They went, that's how they released it. Anyway.
Right. Whatever. Yeah, exactly. But here, if you move forward and you think about it, well, they're now defending, well, you know, there are other great reasons and ways people can use this. I can't think of a good way that this technology can be used to take someone else's face and put it on another person.
No, I thought of, well, okay. The classic example is running for high school office. You get your endorsement from the former presidents or celebrities. That's the only thing I was thinking, how could I have fun with this? And that was one of the things I would do is get myself endorsements from celebrities if I was running for president of the high school class, which I'm 42, so it's not going to happen anytime soon. That ship has sailed, but you know, yeah, it's just, we live in a weird time. And parents listening, I think this is just a reminder that the internet is a dark, scary place with lots of weird alleys. If you don't have some kind of filtering on your network, on your home, on your kids' devices, on your own devices, you know, great, great resources like Covenant Eyes that really can help protect your family, because this stuff's out there and it's not going away. It's just getting stronger and stronger and weirder and weirder.
And it just shows the need. Honestly, I look at it, I still, you know, fun, you know, you can use it for fun to help get yourself an endorsement in high school. But even then, is this necessary? Like, how are we using our awesome talents to really be offered to people? And is it necessary to have the ability to superimpose someone's face somewhere else and now create the possibility for revenge porn, or even just make a joke out of someone? It doesn't even have to be porn.
Oh no. Yeah, you definitely, you know, you could, I just wait till this gets to late night television. Right. Because
yeah.
They've kind of done similar things with really bad kind of puppets, but now you've got a really good puppet, right? Like, and essentially that's what it is. And you can make the president say anything, or you can make the Secretary of State say anything, or, And all of a sudden it looks real and it's funny, you know?
Well, and here is where we have to constantly check ourselves of how are we using our technology? Because I have to tell you, Chris, you know, when I looked at this, even I remember when the Snapchat filters came out where you can switch faces. I personally have always been really creeped out by that. I just don't like what I feel is like the manipulation of the body with technology.
Yeah. Yeah. Where does human dignity come in? And at what point are we so far away from what is real that we've lost any sense of reality? You know, and again, that's, I think there's another art conversation about cosmetic surgery and that whole thing. And, you know, we've forgotten what, you know, what human dignity is, right? And so now everybody's trying to kind of live in this artificial image. And it's a weird thing. It's a weird thing for kids to be growing up with it. It's a weird thing that we're living with it right now. It's really strange. I mean, we've forgotten the dignity of the human person.
Well, and I think that there's become this obsession with being something other than ourselves. You know, you look and everyone loves taking the pictures where they turn themselves into a bumblebee, or their face looks skinnier, or there are the pink sparkles all over their faces.
The weird giant eyes.
The giant eyes, the fishbowl eyes. I mean, I remember when it used to be somewhere like a museum or somewhere where you'd see clowns, where there'd be the big giant mirrors and you'd stand in it and your legs were super long, or your torso short, or you become a midget. Like, you recognize that as weird, right?
Right.
But now we're obsessed with taking photos of ourselves looking like someone other than who we are.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. You know, I think historians are going to look back at this period of history and they're either going to say, like, this is where it went off the rails, or this is where they figured out that it was going off the rails.
Mm.
And, you know, we're the most documented generation ever in the history of the world. I mean, you know, but what does that say about us? You look at what we're documenting. You know,
right.
You look at what we're choosing to save for eternity, not eternity, whatever your computer dies, but, you know, for future generations to look back on. Remember, you know, you look back at those photos of grandma and grandpa, right, relatives, and you, oh my gosh, look at that. That's my grandmother. And then here we get duck face. You know,
duck face.
That's going to be great grandma.
Duck face. You know?
Look at great grandma with duck face and booty shorts.
Duck
there you go,
face.
Kids.
You're forgetting the peace sign.
The peace sign. Yeah, you know, this is a picture of your great grandma with giant eyes and deer antlers. You know, kids.
And she did take the picture of herself.
Then she took it herself. You can tell because of the weird angle. Yeah, you know? It's
the cleavage in the shot.
Oh, my word. Great grandma, what were you thinking? Yeah, that's where I'm living my life now, so my future generations don't have to see any of that of me. That's what I'm...
Are you saying you no longer take photos?
No more duck face and cleavage shots of me. That's...
thank God.
I've tried. There was a time where it felt natural. No.
Or maybe for the men missing the, you know, hair shots, you know, the chest hair, leaving that out of it.
Hey, some of us don't have a choice. That's just the way God made us.
You know, I think that the positive side, you look at this, what can we do? We can work on being more present. You know, we can do we have to document the moment, take a picture of the moment, but encourage people like, hey, just because you're at Disneyland right now, do you have to send 500 photos to every friend letting them know you're here? Enjoy the moment and enjoy yourself here rather than yourself here, but being presented to people other places.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that kind of revolution of analog where we just get off the digital and it's not about showing everybody how much fun we're having. It's just about having fun.
Right.
You know, you're in a place like Yosemite and you're surrounded by this majesty. Just allow yourself to be moved by that. Don't think, oh my gosh, I got to take a selfie right now. You know,
right.
Just let yourself transcend a little bit. Yeah.
I actually have a friend who has one child, and she was just talking about how she's really bummed because she said a lot of her children's music performances she spent recording.
Right.
And she said, it just hit me this last year that every time I'm sitting here recording and focused on the camera, what's great is sure we have a documentation of it, but I realize I spent all of these years now, and while yes, I'm watching it through the video screen, it's kind of preventing me from having really been present in the moment.
At the end of Star Wars A New Hope, Return of the Jedi, Vader asks Luke to take off his mask so he can see him with his own eyes. Most of us are parenting like Darth Vader. We never see our kids' moments through our own eyes. We're always looking through that little screen.
Isn't that interesting? You know, kind of funny story about looking through screens. I remember when I was in Europe, I was in Rome the week that Pope Francis became Pope. And one of his very first Wednesday audience, when he shocked everyone and hopped right out of that little unprotected Pope mobile and starts walking around, I was there as the security guards were panicking and running after him. And he's getting up close to everyone. And I have just some incredible videos and photos. I remember my family back home's like, the Pope's that close to you? He's not protected? I remember there was one point where I thought, oh, I'm just going to like jump slightly over just to touch him. I might fall over the top of this barrier. But here's what happened is he's coming closer and he's reaching his arm down to bless many of the people there. Here are all of these women with their giant iPads and a bunch of their phones. And it was just women that were in front of me, so I'm specifying them. But they're leaning backward away from his hand
right.
That's trying to reach out and bless him because they're trying to take photos of him. And as he tries to like reach over the item to bless them, they lean further back. And what happens is they lean back against people who are already crowded up against them. So then all the people that might have had the opportunity of being blessed are even more so being prevented of like enjoying the moment. And I'm sitting here going, oh my gosh, the rest of the Europe trip, I'm like, I'm leaving my phone behind.
I just imagine what those pictures ended up looking like, where the Pope's like, like big hand reaching out towards him, you know. This is the Pope looking like a zombie. Yeah, probably not what they envisioned it would be.
Right. Well, yeah. And you know, I was there. I do have an awesome shot, and I'll admit, the very first time Pope Francis actually picked someone up who was like paralyzed out of the audience, it was the person right in front of me, and they picked him up and pulled him up so that he could kiss him. I have photos right there, like I was there for that first moment, and which is amazing. But again, that's okay, take one photo and then be there, be present, don't like get the perfect angle, just be there.
Yeah, absolutely.
The memory is actually what we rely on more than the actual photo.
Absolutely. And you know, I try to remember this with my kids. Take one picture of the award and then watch the ceremony happen. That's all you need to do. It's memorialized.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is funny. I have a ton of photos or videos of my younger siblings' performances where like the little kids in the front row are picking their nose. It's like, oh, I remember her. She always picked her nose at every one of them, right? But did you have to get the whole thing and kind of miss it? You know, it's a lesson for each of us, I think, to really work on. Meantime, we are about to head into our next segment of trending. You can tweet me at Timory, and I send out all of the topics throughout the show. You can find Chris Mueller at C Mueller Tweets. This is Timory Millington, and I'm here with my new co-host, Chris Mueller. You guys are listening to Trending.
Hey, hey.
So this week, some of the conversation continues to take place post the Florida shooting, and it's something we've talked a lot about, fatherless homes here on the show, and the weeks following that tragic event. But one of the topics that's really being taken up, I think more and more often lately, is the topic of video games and the impact it has.
Yeah, you know, it's what is the impact of violent video games? And unfortunately, you can look at studies both ways. Violent video games don't do anything. Violent video games do everything. I think just inherently, shouldn't we know that watching, you know, people being murdered repeatedly or murdering people repeatedly, kind of practicing that, is going to have an effect on you. I mean, if you watch someone get hit on TV, we all wince. Why? Because the part of our brain that senses that pain lights up, not as much as if you actually got hit, but enough that you sort of feel it. You have a little bit of an echo of what that pain would be. Well, how is that different from when we're just walking around stalking people in video games? And if you do that for hours and hours and hours, doesn't it seem just, it would just be rational to think that that's going to desensitize you a little bit to the act of killing?
Well, and it makes me think too of back in 2012, that Sandy Hook school shooter that killed 20 young children. I remember it was so tragic because they were like 6 and 7 year olds.
It's horrifying.
And part of what they were able to show is that there has to be some sort of impact. This guy made over 83,000 kills on an online video game, just on this online video game. Do you not think that this had some even slight impact on how he went about killing young children?
Right. Now, is it the sole reason? Probably not.
Right.
There's a lot more going on. Obviously, he was another fatherless home there in Sandy Hook. But if you're already struggling, if you're dealing with depression, if you're dealing with that lack of a masculine influence, if you're dealing with mental illness, and then you combine that with, you know, hours and hours and hours of online killing, I mean, come on. It doesn't take a genius to figure that out.
Well, and at the heart of this entire issue, when I look at video games and you see how video games clearly has been correlated with increase in depression, a decrease in proper nutrition, right? Increase in anxiety, increase in aggression, increase in violence. You kind of go down the road, but I pull back and I say, okay, bottom line, whether it's overuse of video games, overeating, I can't even say overlooking at pornography, looking at pornography.
There you go.
What's the issue at the heart of this? A lack of self-control.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, studies on online addiction have shown that the parts of the brain that control our impulses, right, that should be fully developed by age 25, 26, mm-hmm. are retarded in their development by online addiction, whether that be pornography or video gaming or online shopping or what have you, that our ability to control ourselves is diminished by these online addictions, right? And so then, again, you take violence and you go, I can't control my violent urges. I don't know how to process mm-hmm. those things.
Well, I think that it's a lesson for us. I was really thinking about this and the whole issue of addiction, but more so lack of self-control. You know, I think so often people go, oh, well, I don't play video games. I don't really let my kids play video games. I'm okay. Or I'm not okay. I'm not overweight, so I don't have an issue with food. Or, you know, you could go down the list. I don't gossip, but I know so-and-so gossips. They need to work on that. We could go on and on and on. I think it's Romans chapter 1 where we read from St. Paul and he talks about slander. You know, stealers, you know, people who are covet things, and he just goes on and on, adulterers. And like, to be quite frank, all of us can raise our hands a couple times at one of those points, like gossips, like you just name it. And I think each of us have an area in our life where we need to work on that self-control. And, you know, maybe it's that you are okay with video games. That's fine. But do you allow violent video games to be played? And for how long each day are those good video games being played?
Well, even if your kid is playing Minecraft, which can be pretty violent in and of itself, if you're letting your child escape into virtual reality for hours and hours every day, what is that saying about the health of their reality?
Right.
That they need to escape that much. You know, you look at this idea of self-control, and then it just speaks to the wisdom of the church over the centuries teaching fasting, right? Mm. Because when we teach, you know, you make a small sacrifice, you're asserting a control over yourself. That's a discipline that you can say no to those small things. And so when large temptation comes in, you've already trained yourself in saying no. You know, have taken that self-mastery. And I just don't think there's anywhere in our society that is encouraging people to exercise any sort of self-control.
Well, and that is why it's so incredible that for most of you guys listening, you guys are in the middle of Lent right now, you know, and the church offers and says, you have to fast on Fridays during Lent from meat, right? The church actually requests that we abstain from meat all year long.
Yeah, it's amazing how people have kind of forgotten that.
You know how often people, the church doesn't say that. I don't know what you're talking about. So then you pull it up, here you go. If it's not meat, something of the same amount if you can't offer up meat.
Right. What the church said, it didn't say take away all fasting on Fridays. It said, or something else of the same amount, right? And
right.
But, you know, meat obviously would have been the easiest just to continue doing meat, yeah.
Well, and even just to think, okay, if I'm not supposed to have meat on Fridays, maybe I shouldn't have dessert and those cookies. You know, maybe I shouldn't have that extra serving of fruit. You know, starting to have, you know, that constant daily interaction of temperance and self-control. I would really like that second portion that tasted really good, but actually I'm satisfied.
Right.
You know, that's where, like you said, those small things impact the big things and decisions later on.
Yeah. And it's, again, if you're dealing with an online addiction, you're dealing with these things. Where are you giving yourself those boundaries? You know, how are you helping yourself out with that? You know, I mentioned, you know, different web browser filters that you can use, but those things are great. But maybe start with a fast in a different area just to reinforce your ability to say no to yourself mm-hmm. as you're heading on and trying to deal with these kind of online or gaming addictions.
Right. Well, and even maybe it's that, you know, hey, I know that I struggle the most when I'm home alone at night in the evenings or when I go to bed, right? I tended to flip out my phone. Maybe that's when you struggle. Well, maybe build the habit of I pray my rosary every night when I get into bed.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
These things that, not that you should replace something with something else, but that you replace bad behavior with good behavior. Not bad things with good things, but bad behavior with good behavior.
Well, and then also to say, I spend hours every day on these online games where I'm stalking down people, hunting them and killing them, maybe working with a team. What's going on in my life that I need this? You know, why am I going more and more online, whether that be watching YouTube videos or whether that be playing online gaming or World of Warcraft or whatever? What's going on that I need to escape into this alternate reality, you know, and how can I address my reality? And then to, you know, talk to parents, talk to friends, talk to counselors or priests to say, hey, I need some help in this area of my life. How better off would we be if we all kind of looked our lives that way?
You know, and here's a great tip for parents or for any of us, you know, even just, you know, we who are obsessed with our phones and social media, right? Get outside. Find someone to have real person-to-person interaction with. Even maybe they're far away and you can pick up the phone and call them and, I don't know, fold laundry or cook a meal while you do that. You know, ways to get outside, get in touch with reality, observe nature, even just the importance of breathing and how nature itself inspires us to breathe and relax.
Well, it's been clinically proven that just getting out and going for a walk in the sunlight improves your mood. It helps when you're dealing with depression. Yeah, it's a real easy way to do that. And if you look at pretty much all of the great thinkers of history, they all had this habit of going out and walking, you know?
Absolutely.
We've taken that out of our daily existence. It's a really easy thing to add in. It doesn't take forever. Go for a 5-minute walk.
I mean, aren't you just proud that you parked further away from the front row when you went to the grocery store? That's how people are proud of themselves. Oh, I didn't park at the front. I parked further away so that I had to walk further. Okay, that 20 steps is great if you're really not getting any exercise, but go for a walk.
Right. Yeah, rather than watching another episode on Netflix, you're guilty, you know, walk around the block, you know, take your dog for a walk. Lord knows he wants to go.
So this last week, while we were away, a major death took place in the world for the science community of Stephen Hawking.
Yeah, Stephen Hawking's, you know, the fact that he dealt with Lou Gehrig's disease, and I can't remember the actual name of
ALS.
The disease. ALS. He dealt with it for just such an amazing, it's just incredible how long he lived with that disease and continued to flourish and thrive. I hate to take this to that, the debate on assisted suicide, but think, you know, as far as if you're concerned with his scientific discoveries, thank you, Lord, that no one ever kind of pushed him towards ending his life. And in fact, when he was depressed, his mentor said, no, your life isn't over. You can continue to serve and to think and to publish. And he did. You know, for 20-something years.
Well, and someone with ALS is the perfect candidate for physician-assisted suicide. In fact, for anyone who's listened, they've heard me on the show tell a story about when I was involved in the lobbying effort to defeat physician-assisted suicide in 2007 and how it was the last end. We were with the right-hand person who had authored the bill. We were in there. He was like their chief of staff in the hallway. And we had actually a man with ALS and his family who went with us to talk to this specific legislator. And he wouldn't meet with us, but again, his chief of staff came out and was willing to, at the last minute, decide to talk to us in the hall for a minute on her way out that day after we had been trying to meet with them. And here's what happened. She was able to see a man with ALS who was paralyzed from the neck down, whose family was right there. And yes, they mentioned there were days of great struggle, and even days there was a story where he was asking, kind of trying to interact with his one daughter to pull the plug on the machine. But it was in a dark moment. And right. They were so glad that they didn't do that, and that he was grateful that they didn't. And I look at Stephen Hawking and look at the contribution he made. 50 years that he struggled with this paralysis through his body. And you just look at, yes, he was an atheist. Do you maybe understand why he struggled at times with his faith? But he was also someone who interacted with the church and was part of the Pontifical Academy of Science and who knew the last three popes.
Yeah, which is amazing. You know, and again, real strong statement there. The church is not anti-science. You know, we want, it's funny, the closing statements of Vatican II, the church talks about how we're all seekers of truth. You know, scientists, we want to work with you because our goal is the same as yours. It's truth. And we need to work together to seek and to find that. And wherever scientists are seeking it, the church will support them.
If you're a listener of the show, I ask you to be sure to share an episode of Trending with a friend or family member. Maybe you're listening in your car. You can find us on iTunes. Just look up Trending with Timory, soon adding on Chris online as well. And you can also pull us up on the iHeartRadio app. I know a lot of people enjoy listening from there. All of the topics that we discuss are actually tweeted out at my Twitter at Timory, and you can interact on Instagram, Facebook. I love to hear what you guys are struggling with and what you guys want to hear discussed, because a lot of our topics are pulled from what you guys are mentioning. We'll be right back on the show with Chris Mueller and Timory Millington. Welcome back to Trending. This is Timory. That's Chris Mueller, my new co-host. Big announcement.
Hey guys, how you doing?
You know, there was back in, I think it was 2000, when my brother, who just turned 18, very sad looking back at all the little baby photos and seeing how old he is now. Just saying. But when he was born, my mom had just made the transition over from listening to secular music to Christian music. Actually, it was probably one of the first days where we were really kind of getting into the groove of the Christian music. I remember, you know, me dancing at the time already. I was all in, you know, knee deep in the secular music. I remember I was even frustrated at the time. And one of the songs that came out right around the time, I think it was 1999 that the song came out, was I Can Only Imagine. And it was actually one of the first songs that I really fell in love with, besides another one, I think it was In My Father's House, for Christian music, that I really grew to appreciate Christian music. It's by Mercy Me, and it was just a song about what we would hear discussed in church, the beatific vision in some ways, and just being there in God's presence. And so it was huge news this week, Chris, when this song that was inspired by one of the band's lead singers, this song was actually a story about his father and redemption, and how now it's been made into a movie, box office number 3 for the weekend.
Which is pretty amazing. I mean, Black Panther's taking a lot of water out of the pool there. I mean, what was number 2?
Number 2 was, so first was Black Panther, number 2, oh, Tomb Raider, I cannot wait to see that one.
So you got two huge budget, you know, action films, and then number 3 is this faith-based film, I Can Only Imagine, which just shows you, Hollywood, just listen to the people. We want good stories about faith. We want good faith-based films. I think, you know, there are a lot of us Christians out there, Hollywood. We're going to go see them. We're going to go support them.
You know, and I think we can still safely say that the vast majority of Americans are Christian. We are. You know, I think of when on Dancing with the Stars, Candace Cameron was on and she would talk about her Christian faith and the audience would go crazy. And I'll tell you this, a lot of that audience was actually filled with people in Hollywood. And so when you have people saying, you know, hey, Christianity's dying, it has in some people, but it's always there in the hearts of many. And I think it's always a desire that many people have.
You know, I love about this film too, is it's a faith-based film, but it's not in the Christian ghetto. It's not in that sort of Christian film section, right? Mm-hmm. It's a mainstream film. It's out there in the public. It's number 3 in the box office. It's not relegated to like some kind of subgenre. It's out there. And I think as Christians, we need to be out there contributing to the arts, really doing good work so that we're not making, you know, again, I've got no problem with Christian music or worship music stations, But we also need people out there on the pop stations in the mainstream, because as long as we allow ourselves to be diverted off into this subculture, we're not affecting the movement of our broader culture. We need to get out there into the mainstream, and I love that these guys have done this with this film.
Well, and I look at it like, congratulations to Roadside. Like, this is their highest grossing film ever. And you look at it, and it's funny because they had a pre-screening of it like about a week and a half ago, and all of a sudden there was this prediction, this movie is actually going to go over really well. Friday happens. Wow. Blown out of the water. Saturday happens. $17.1 million opening, which is huge. Sorry, billion. Is it billion or million?
No,
million.
No,
sorry. These numbers always throw me off, but this is huge for a Christian movie. And, you know, to see a movie that shows the power of forgiveness, that there is hope for everyone to go to heaven if we just turn toward our Lord. And grant, there's probably somewhat of a Protestant-esque salvation type of mindset, right? That being said, it's still a Christian film that is out there and that is being absolutely adored.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was just reading the closing statements of Vatican II. I referenced that in the last segment. And the church speaks to artists. Mm. And the church says, we need artists because we need beauty, right? Mm-hmm. And we need you to go out there. And I love it because the church talks about how, you know, through the ages, like, we've cooperated, church and artists, we've cooperated, and don't throw away that partnership.
Right.
You know, and I think we're at a point in our culture where the need for authentic, good beauty is so obvious because we've traded away for that, the kind of shadow of this disgusting.
Look at the box office this weekend. You know, Tomb Raider came in second. Black Panther for, I think this is the third or fourth week in a row, which even that movie itself is presenting a culture and the beauty of a culture and then taking you into a fantasy world at the same time. I think you see the pursuit of good, solid content that, because it's good and truthful, has a beauty to it. Tomb Raider, you know, I was looking at it. I cannot wait to see the prequel to the original Tomb Raiders. Even that actually didn't have any junk in it. There weren't any sex scenes.
Right.
It was totally a clean film. Then you have, you know, this film as well. You know, I can only imagine. Then in fourth was Oprah Winfrey's movie, A Wrinkle in Time.
Oh, yeah.
Also, another clean movie. Top four movies in the box office this week. You guys, that's saying something. And here's an example. While maybe there aren't always perfect, you know, philosophical ideas in these movies, they're solid movies that you could take your kids to see.
Right, but then you look at what the Academy of, you know, Motion Picture Arts chooses to give awards to. You look at what, you know, the Golden Globes chooses to give awards to. And, you know, they're not giving awards to family films. They're not giving awards to films that people want to go see. And, you know, I think there's this self-referential thing in Hollywood where they're making films for each other a lot of times, and, you know, we're just kind of an afterthought.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, over the last couple of weeks, we have heard information. We heard the rumor last month from Pope Francis that finally Pope Paul VI, the second miracle, was confirmed, and Pope Paul VI will soon be canonized a saint.
Wow. So now we have John the 23rd, Pope Paul VI, and John Paul the Great all canonized.
Right.
So essentially, you know, if there's ever any doubt about Vatican II, door's been slammed shut on that one. I mean, you have the Pope who started it, the Pope who basically oversaw the whole conference or the whole council, and then you've got the Pope who then, you know, implemented it in John Paul II. You know, so the church is really affirming that teaching of Vatican II right there. Boom. It's just like saying this happened. This is the will of the Holy Spirit as, you know, guiding the church.
Well, and just think of the importance of every people being able to access their faith in their language, right? I think that that's something that's so beautiful. And while we've seen a huge trend in this turn back to the traditional Latin Mass, there's that appreciation of the interpretation and the understanding of the different Mass parts that maybe, yes, have been lost at times in translation. And that's where, you know, I think there's always a balance. I recognize that maybe some of the interpretation of Vatican II was not correct. But again, that's interpretation, not Vatican II itself.
Right. And you look at the history of the church. I mean, you go prior to Trent and you had this very diverse liturgical, you know, sense. I mean, and the liturgy really was varied depending on where you went and what parts of the world you were in and in different dioceses. And obviously Trent and the Counter-Reformation movement said, no, we need to really get clear on what it is and what it isn't. But, you know, you go then Vatican II says, okay, well, we've gotten clear. We fully understand who we are as a church and what's integral. And now we're going to start moving a little bit more. So you're seeing that diversity of the churches again without losing these integral things. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I think it, you know, I love the hope of Vatican II. You know, you read the church fathers and the different documents that are published on it. You know, the opening of it, the closing of it. You know, as I said, I was just reading Vatican II again this morning. And I just think it's so beautiful how the church is alive. You know,
right.
we're constantly moving forward in history. And that's not to say I hate when you say moving forward, people are like, well, we're moving forward and change the teachings. That's not what I'm saying. Like, the church is not running from today. The church is very much in today, as it is in every generation. And we're never going to stop moving into today, you know, and I love that. I love
and
it.
And it said, beautiful. Let's make everything in the church more accessible to
Absolutely.
The people. And even just the push for sacred scripture and what came out of Vatican II.
Ooh.
And the fact that, hey, guess what? We're Catholics. We're meant to embrace sacred scripture. You know, man, I just did a Bible study last week and at a parish, and guess what? I even sent a reminder to the host saying, make sure you tell everyone, BYOB. And that means Bibles, you Catholics. Like, come on, we've got to wake up. And half the Catholics don't bring their Bibles, you know, and it's just a reminder, you guys, we've got to pick up our Bibles and we've got to interact with the Word of God that has been made so prominently available to us. And that Word of God in our lives, just like the sacraments, is life changing.
Oh, absolutely. And the renewal of kind of the Catholic lady in the Bible, and even the scholarship, biblical scholarship. Absolutely. And we just have to, I just think that's the part we need to remember, is we just need to keep diving deeper and deeper and deeper into this. We can't talk about Pope Paul VI without talking about Humana Vitae.
Right. Well, and you know what? Humana Vitae, we're here in the 50th anniversary. I think it's providential that the church has said, okay, now we're going to canonize this pope. We've, you know, delayed just a little bit. This pope's second miracle was also the healing of an unborn child. And did I mention the first one? Was it the healing of an unborn child? Which falls right in line with what he's writing in Humana Vitae of this openness to life and the responsibility of couples to be open to life.
Yeah, you know, reading that document, you are reading prophecy, you know, and it's just clear, you know, as he talks about, it's also to be feared that the man growing used to the employment of anticonceptive practices may finally lose respect for the woman, and no longer caring for physical and psychological equilibrium may come to the point of considering her as a mere instrument of selfish enjoyment and no longer his respected and beloved companion.
Right.
Check that box. We got here. You know, like, you called it. You
right.
called it, it
and
you know.
Women's disorientation in the culture today, and then even the prediction he makes about how it will be used as a form of population control. Hello, we're getting to the place where even the United States, we are not replacing ourselves properly. Denmark, they're putting ads on television trying to get people to procreate, and it's like a joke, it's satire almost, but this is where we're at. And I look at Pope Paul II, he was so incredibly persecuted that was the very last encyclical he ever wrote as Pope, because it was something that people just needed to continue to chew on, and they were so heated that the church is yet again entering into the realm of sexual morality. But it was so important because it's not just sexual morality, it's human flourishment.
Right. I mean, this is integral to the human person. The church has to speak to it, because this is so integral to who we are. And I think John Paul II then carries that in Theology of the Body and just unfolds that tremendous mystery of how we can come to know the Lord, you know, through the human person.
Right.
You know, it's so beautiful.
Well, and you rewind a little bit, John Paul II's love and responsibility as Kirill Wojtyla is what actually informed and helped Pope John Paul VI in writing Humana Vitae. So the prequel to Theology of the Body is what has helped to form our church's conversation in its constant renewal of what the church has taught. You know, there's so much that can be said of Pope Paul VI, and I know we'll be talking a lot about it this summer, and especially in the fall when he's canonized and on the anniversary of Roe versus Wade. Have a great week, you guys.